Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live. Hello to Jamie Ho.
Hello, Mal. Nice to be with you.
Wow, what a great honor to have you on the program. Well, I have to remember to start the program. I always forget to start the program. So, ta-da! My name is Mel Rosenberg, and I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And welcome, everybody. And today I have a celebrated and a wonderful, kind and generous author-illustrator, Jamie Ho, talking to us from somewhere in the eastern United States.
Yes, I'm in Boston. I'm around greater Boston area, Massachusetts in the U.S.
Yes, and Boston is really great. So being in the greater area is fine. Stupid joke. And and I've been wanting to interview you ever since I came upon your beautiful, beautiful children's book about a bear and a frozen chicken, which is called Bear and Chicken.
Yes.
And I love that book, and so I chased after you. Ah, here it is.
Yes.
And this is your debut picture book.
It is my debut picture book as an author illustrator.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that because I love the book. But we're here to celebrate because in 12 days, in 12 short days, you are launching a new book with the celebrated author, Eric Juron. Yay. You guys aren't making it easy for me to pronounce names here. Right. You're Jamie with two N's.
And I know. It's shocking to everybody.
When am I going to get the John Smith on the program?
I know, something easy.
And so congratulations. So do you want to show everybody who's watching the new book?
Which you can
order already, of course.
Yes. So this is called Fry Guys with Eric Durant, and it is an early reader graphic novel. So I can show you some pages.
Yes.
Here. So yes, it's coming out in two weeks, and it's about, these are the three characters. So this is Waffles, this is Curly, and this is Sweets. And these are the evil onion rings that are attacked their town called Spud Town, and they're going to save their town from these evil onion rings. So it's really fun. There's a lot of puns. Eric did a really great job. So I had a lot of fun illustrating it. I love drawing anthropomorphic food or anthropomorphic objects. So this was a fun one for me to do.
And first of all, it's interesting because it's a graphic novel for very young people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What age are you shooting for?
I believe it's like around 6 to 9. So it's kind of like that weird in between, you know, people. I've kind of shown this to, I went to a show with a preview copy and there was a first grader that was reading it, which was really, really lovely to see. So, yeah.
And they love the graphic art.
Oh, they do. It's such an explosion of graphic novels out there right now. And so it's nice to kind of have like very specific graphic novels for, you know, that little section of kids who are just beating to read.
And it's unabashed nonsense. except for a few people who are going to say, you know, I've wondered what aliens look like all my life. And now I know. They're onion rings.
Let me see if I can get I'm going to find a page. So here's when they're attacking the town. Let's see. So there are a lot of them.
It's a wonderful book. And I think that I'm a big nonsense fan, and I'm a huge pun fan, as anybody listening knows. So I think that kids are going to love this book. And it's right in your face, and you've done such a great work with the art. How did you get this gig, Janie?
Oh gosh, my lovely editor is somebody that I used to work with at Scholastic on another project, and Erin, shout out to Erin, and she knew that I liked drawing anthropomorphic food. I actually did a project that was basically a bunch of anthropomorphic desserts. And so then she knew that I liked doing comics too. And so when they kind of came to me with this project, I was like, this is the most perfect project for me. It was funny because I actually had told a friend that all I wanted to do was draw anthropomorphic food and comics. And then this project came along. It was kind of like, oh yes, I knew that I was the perfect person to do the project. Like, well, at least this is like my heart. So I'm really glad that when they loved my samples and so that we proceeded. So this is
and they actually paid you for that.
Yes. Doing something that I was like, this is what I really want to do. And you never know, like, how, like, is that really possible when you're wishing for something very specific like that, anthropomorphic food and comics together? I just want to draw something like that. And then the universe kind of shows you, yes, it is possible. So yes, I really was really excited, and I'm glad that it's going to come out soon.
It's wonderful. And and kids are going to love it. They're going to eat it up. Oy vey.
Eat it up.
My first pun.
Very good. Right.
So Janie, I'm so delighted to meet you. Talk to us about your early life. You weren't born in the States. Talk to us.
Oh gosh, you're going way back, I guess. So I was born in Hong Kong, and I kind of grew up there until the age of 9. And then my family had immigrated to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where I grew up there with my sister, and then later my brother was born. Yes. And then I moved to New York because I wanted to study fashion. I actually thought that I didn't know any art careers. I loved to draw when I was a kid. I loved making stories, but I didn't know that this could be a career back then. So one of the things that I thought that I could do was fashion design, because there was just some classes for high school kids. So I went to New York to become a fashion designer. And then I realized, no, I don't like fashion at all. I actually like illustration. So that's kind of where my path went to drawing and making stories. So.
And you studied at?
I studied illustration. Yes. Yeah. So I graduated with a BFA in illustration from Parsons. And then.
So we should say a few words about Parsons. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, Parsons is a wonderful place. I miss it so much. It's such a great place just because, you know, I got to be in New York City. That was really, you know, really lovely being in Philadelphia and then moving. I really wanted to be in New York. So that was an opportunity for me to do so. And there was just so many talented people there. There was just so many opportunities I got just being there. So yeah, shout out to Parsons. I haven't been back for a long time, but yes. So I had a really great, you know, great time. I remember seeing their senior thesis show. So the seniors would have a show. And when I wasn't sure about the whole fashion design thing, I actually saw their illustration show. And I was like, these are my people. I found my people. This was exactly what I wanted to do. I had no idea that this could be a thing. So shout out to Parsons.
Did you exhibit there?
Yes. So all the seniors in the end kind of have their own senior show. So I had some crazy senior show thesis. I kind of did like a vending machine, and I made a board, like designed board games. I wish I need to dig up the pictures, because they were really crazy and silly and out there. I can't believe I did that as a thesis, but that's where the creativity like gets nurtured, right? Do the crazy stuff.
So Janie, I have a theory.
Okay.
That those of us who write for children are actually children at heart.
Yes.
So how old a child are you at heart?
You know what? That's a funny question, because the artwork that I do, and it's like, I don't really think of it as an age, but it apparently everybody, all the publishers has kind of pegged my artwork for like kindergartner and first grade. So that would be like 5 to 6 years old. And then when I do school visits, I actually really, really love kindergartners or first graders. So, because they actually, they think I'm funny. When I make a joke with them, they think I'm very, very funny. So I they're very enjoyable. So I think I'm probably a 5 to 6 year old.
Okay, but when you were 5 or 6, you were in Hong Kong.
I was in Hong Kong.
In a kindergarten, probably speaking in Cantonese.
Yes, 100%, 100%.
And that is an age where something happened. Because at 9, you know, if you said I'm a 9 year old, well, you know, there was an upheaval in your life. Mm-hmm. But in 5, you were in Hong Kong among other people of the same culture.
Yes, yes.
And with your mother tongue, mm-hmm. did something happen when you were in kindergarten? Were you particularly happy or sad?
No, yeah. It's kind of funny because it's like, it's very contained. You know, my memories in Hong Kong is just very contained. And it's such a short, it's almost like a short time period too, because, and it's so different, but I just remember being really happy. I get to draw. It's funny, I'll tell the story that I've always loved to draw even when I was 5, 6, but then my mom, like the Asian mom that she is, wanted to push me to do piano. And I was not crazy about piano. Like I played it, but I didn't really love it like I did drawing. So actually it got to the point where, you know, I wasn't practicing my piano, and it got to the point where my mom kind of threatened me to say, well, or not threatened me, but I guess more like bartered with me that, like, if you want art lessons, hey, if you want to go take those drawing classes, you practice your piano and then you can take those drawing lessons, those art classes.
I thought she was going to say you eat your onion rings and then you can.
No, it's your onion rings. Chinese onion rings. But yeah. So, but I had a good childhood in Hong Kong. I recently went back. I actually went back to Hong Kong this past summer, and I haven't been back in probably over 25 years.
Wow.
So that was very interesting. It was really kind of, it felt really just, it filled my heart to go back to, you know, where I came from.
Two things that you miss back in Hong Kong that you don't have in the States.
Oh, the food, of course. 100% the food. The top two is food and food. Food and drink.
What? Everybody eats Chinese food in the States.
It's not the same kind of food. It's not the same kind of food. I mean, my whole family, we ate so much food. You know, just stuff from my childhood, actually, that you can't replicate here. So there was like fish balls, curry fish balls, and cheng fun, and rice noodles, and different types of noodles I've had as my, in, you know, my childhood, like we had at the beach in Hong Kong, and just very, very specific food that associates with specific places and memories.
And you moved to Philadelphia because?
Oh, my family just immigrated. Yes, they just decided to immigrate. So
they wanted to eat more hamburgers. What was the
they wanted to, I guess it's like, I want a better, like more opportunities for me and my sister, I guess. So.
So this was the real Asian thing.
Yes.
We sacrifice ourselves for the benefit of the next
100%,
generation.
100%, you know then. Yes. This whole idea.
So, yeah.
And then, I became an author illustrator. I don't know if that worked out, I guess.
So, okay. No, so you graduated from Parsons. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes people, if I'm not mistaken, if they're seeing your exhibit, you know, editors come and sometimes they buy your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I didn't. Yes.
So how did you? So you did it. You made vending machines rather than illustrated children's books. So then, what happened? How did you break in? How did you become one of the 1,000 authors that breaks into this traditional business?
Oh, that's okay. I'll give a short version of it. It took a while, but actually, the first job that I got out of school, funny enough, was in children's wear, was in fashion, because I guess I graduated from Parsons, and I really always loved to do stuff for children, but just oddly enough, I got a job doing kind of like t-shirts, like graphic design, like graphics on t-shirts, on kids, and prints on like pajamas, stuff like that. And I worked there for about 7-8 months, and I actually hated it a lot. And I realized I was definitely not in does not have the personality to do fashion. But so that was like, oh, that was not good for me. And then I left. And since it's hard to get a full-time job doing it, being an illustrator, I decided to switch and become a designer at Nickelodeon magazine, which doesn't exist anymore, but it's a fabulous magazine. And it's just, there's comics inside, there's pranks, not just like Nickelodeon content. So there I was working as a designer for a while. But this was really great because I actually got to commission illustrations. And so I kind of learned the other side of the industry, right? Like how to be a good illustrator. You know that there's different people that have to, are looking at your work and feedback and meeting your deadlines. And it's really important because there's a lot of people counting on you to send your work in time on a timely matter. So that was really great, but I got to commission illustrations. But then when I left I left that job to go to Scholastic. And Scholastic Book Clubs, I don't know if you know, that's where they have the flyers they send to all the elementary schools. So they get to, like, you know, all the kids like to like check what book they like, and they're usually fairly inexpensive. And so I got to work there, and that's when the love of children's book really, really started, because we had meetings where every month we would think about what books to put in the catalog, like to what would be popular with the kids. And then, so I got a lesson in just every month. What are the good books? What are the popular books? What should we put in this month? So that was when I was really loving, children's books. And then I was on the side kind of reviving my illustration portfolio and building it. And, but then I eventually got an agent during that time when I was working at Scholastic, who I'm still with today, shout out to Mella. And so, but I was trying to just working, you know, as a designer there, and then kind of doing illustration on the side. Then I moved on to another magazine, which is Time Magazine for Kids, which kind of is like a nice transition between just my experience working in children's publishing and magazines. And then eventually when I was there, I was really doing a lot more illustration work, and I was burning myself in both ends. So I just decided I have to pick one or the other, because I was just extremely burnt out. And so I decided to choose illustration instead. And so that's kind of how I became a children's book illustrator for a long time.
That's a great story.
Oh, thank you.
You didn't answer the question, but I love stories. So it's even better. You could be Jewish, you know?
You think so?
I hate answering the question, right? I like telling a story. That's a great story. So, but how did you write your first book, and how did you get in?
How did I get in? I guess it was because of the agent. Yeah, it was just like kind of.
When you got the agent, had you written the Baron Chicken?
No. That was just more like illustration portfolio pieces. Yeah. So I was working kind of two jobs because that influenced my work a lot. Like I did love working for children, but I wasn't sure. But my day job was kind of working a lot of a lot of children's book stuff. I think it all influences each other. So I was making a lot of illustration portfolio. I didn't write anything. I wasn't planning to be an author, but I really loved books, so I wanted to illustrate other people's story, and that's how I got my foot in the door. But I think eventually that when you illustrate enough books, then the ultimate question is, everyone always asks, like, when do you write your own book? But yeah, then I started writing my own book. It took a very long time. That's what it took, like 5 to 7 years from kind of the seed of like me saying I want to write a book to kind of actually having the book out. Okay. I mean, a lot of critique groups, a lot of, you know, my agent helping me, eventually my editor refining it. So a lot of people helping me along the way.
SCBWI too?
Oh, yes, definitely. I joined that for a long time. I was going to workshops and the conferences, you know, the one in New York. I gave a talk, you know, in LA. I've done the ones that were regional here in New England. So I'm like teaching and I'm learning and like.
So how many children's books had you illustrated before you broke in as an author illustrator?
Oh gosh, probably at least like 50, 60, 70. I mean, I've illustrated many, many books because it's like board books, activity books, picture books. They're not all this, you know, some of board books are a couple of spreads, but.
No, but you should have that on your CV.
Yeah.
You know, enough with this cultural Buddhism. Brag. Okay. Brag.
But it's all, interconnected.
I want to teach you how to be a little bit American, even though I'm Canadian-Israeli. Hi, I'm Janie Ho. And then you put in the brackets, how pronounce Janie Ho.
Oh, yes. I have that most of the time.
I have illustrated 342 children's books.
I have to count.
Yeah. So after this session... You're gonna be busy for 2 months now counting how many books you've illustrated, because I didn't know. I do research on you, and then you know we have the conversation, and wow. So after illustrating about 50 books, you decided you wanted to be an author, but you didn't have really an idea. You had an idea. How did the idea come to you?
The idea, the characters. I always come up with the characters because I think I'm just an illustrator through and through. So all of my stories have been starting out with characters. So I started, I had Bear and Chicken in one of the banners, you know, back in the day when I had a blog, there was like a little banner on top where you can just kind of like swap out the art for the seasons. And I actually illustrated this bear and this chicken character kind of like laying in the sun. And everybody was saying, they look like, do they have a story? You know, everybody was like commenting on it. And I think that was the seed of like, oh, I should make a story out of these two characters. And I feel like now most of my stories now are really based on like character first, and I kind of give them a story. That's how I work now.
Okay, so that explains a lot. Because the trope, you know, of one animal about to eat another and the interaction between them is a common theme. And I use it too. But what is special about your book are these characters. They are so empathetic. This bear, who's like a almost a Buddhist bear, right? He just wants to help the world, right? He sees this frozen chicken.
Yes.
I thought of a frozen chicken in a supermarket. I don't know whether that's where you were going. and he feels this wonderful kinship from the get-go.
Yes. Yes, I mean.
And she's a paranoid chicken.
Paranoid chicken, that sounds like me actually. Yes, because I also love the idea, which I kind of talk a lot about this in my workshop. I love the idea of like a really big character, like the bear, and a little tiny character, like a chicken. Like, can these two characters be friends? They're so different, you know, at least physically, right? Like one is kind of like a predator. The other chicken is always kind of like a prey. So can these two characters in this wonderful kind of like imaginary children's world, like, can they be friends? And I think they can. So I guess that's how the story came to be.
And maybe that's why I love it so much.
Oh, thank you.
It's how did the book sell? It's such an endearing book. Can you show us a few pictures and spreads for us?
Oh yeah, here it is. So this is Bear and Chicken. So there's like in the cover, you know, there's like a little suggestion that there's cookbooks up here. We don't know what is happening. And so this is the first spread. So Bear finds chicken frozen in the snow.
I love it. It's like a two-dimensional chicken. It's like a really.
It's kind of flat. Just
a flat frozen chicken.
Flattened. But kind of so Bear brings him in, brings the chicken in, and it's just kind of like all kinds of suggestions in the text and also in the illustrations. You know, Bear's like kind of smiling with the sharp teeth, and it's kind of
I want to say, Janie, I love that. Can you read the text also?
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry for being such a groupie for this book, but
Bear burrito wrapped chicken in his favorite blanket. Chicken woke up to the sound of a hot crackling fire. Bear smiled, but all chicken saw was his sharp teeth. So yeah, a lot of suggestions as to, you know, that maybe Bear that's going to eat, you know, preparing chicken for lunch. And, you know, just a lot of chicken simmered in suspicion. and then there's a chase scene. There's this scene where chicken is imagining that bear is going to eat her. I love this part because every time I do story time with kids, there's always a gasp. Either some kids are like a little disturbed and scared that something might happen, or some kids would be finding it funny because they know that it's going to be all right. So it's kind of interesting to see what the kids' reactions are. But at the end, they kind of, this is the end where they kind of just have vegetable soup together.
And yes, Jamie, it's a very suspicious soup, you must admit.
It is suspicious.
I mean, if I were that chicken, and I mean, there's everything in that soup except the chicken, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And it's funny because the vegetable soup, it's like, you know, it asks for like water vegetable stock, but you can totally use chicken stock in it.
does it say?
Yes, it doesn't say chicken stock. It says vegetable or water.
Ah, okay. So it doesn't say chicken. Doesn't say chicken stock optional.
No, which that would have been really funny though.
You remind me, the story reminds me of a Jewish proverb. You know, in Europe, the Jews lived in the Pale, in the shtetls, and they were very poor. And there was a saying when there was chicken soup served, either somebody in the family was sick or the chicken was. Anyway, congratulations for that masterpiece. I really love that book.
Thank you.
And then what happened after that? You went after that great success as a writer. You spend most of your time now illustrating, no?
Yeah, well, I had my second book out that illustrated a few years later. It took me a couple years to kind of get my second book out there, but I was still working in children's books.
But why did it take 2 years?
You know what? It took what it did take. It was
you have, me, you, have, think, you have the talent, you have the agent. You have the name.
It took me a while. I'm hoping to work faster. I have to admit, it was a slow process, but and also publishing is also very slow too. On that end, like even if you get something kind of contracted, it still takes a long time. But my
go ahead.
Oh no, this is the second book that I did, which I wrote and illustrated too. So it's a little different. It's not picture books. It's ended up being a board book. But I love it so much because that obviously has a lot of meaning to me. It's about Chinese New Year and Lunar New Year and just the traditions that what you do to celebrate, and it counts to 12 in Chinese. So so this is like special to me too. So
in Cantonese or Mandarin?
It was originally in Cantonese, but we had decided to change it in Mandarin to just have it more accessible because I know a lot of kids are learning more Mandarin. But
you show us a bit of it?
Yes. So it basically follows the zodiac animals. And so the 12 zodiac animals, so it's just the mouse kind of preparing the house. And just as it shows all the traditions, we wear new clothes for the new year. We buy beautiful, you know, specific flowers to bring luck, and like the red banners. And it's just kind of the different animals, the different zodiac animals starts coming in and just kind of doing all the decorations to the house. The mandarin oranges, the tangerines, and just the candy dishes that we bring, and the red envelopes, of course. Most people know about that, with the lucky money for the kids. And so the animals are just coming, and the firecrackers, making dumplings. And so they all bring the food, and they kind of have up one big feast, which in Chinese culture is really the big meal that's important. And then in the end, there's just some, like, it explains the different traditions, at least, you know, mostly my family share, and then just the numbers in Chinese on the bottom. So this was kind of near and dear to me because I was working on it for a long time and just to get it right. So yeah.
That's wonderful. We should do a Happy Jewish New Year book.
You should.
No, not me. We.
Yes. You'll have to let me know, you know, you're going to have to tell me all the interesting facts and all the interesting traditions, right?
Absolutely. Wow. So why have you moved mostly to board books, or are you going to correct me again?
No, I've always done all types of different books. So I know that my work tends to be really young. I didn't plan to have my work be young, but a lot of, I guess, publishers just peg me as like a very young, like my work tends to lean younger, even with like Bear and Chicken. My work is still a younger picture book per se. So I just end up, I guess my work is just really suitable. My illustration work is really suitable for board books. And so since I've illustrated them for a long time, I kind of know the beats and the concepts of board books. They're usually conceptual. And so this was like more of a concept book because it's counting, it's traditions. So this ended up being a board book. But yeah, I mean, I kind of float between board books, picture books, graphic novels now, just kind of floating back and forth. I don't feel like I have like one thing that I want to do and just do that. So.
And you have another Fry Guys book coming out, or am I mistaken?
Yes, I'm working on that now, actually. Fry Guys 2. I'm working on that now. I think it should actually come out next year.
You're not going to spill the beans on that one, though.
I can't spill the beans. No.
So I'm going to predict that the aliens now are beans, you see.
Well, we'll see. You never know.
Okay.
What type of food will show up? I can't tell right now.
The other question I want to ask is, how long does it take to illustrate a book like that? There's so many decisions.
You mean for Fry Guys? Like a graphic novel?
But for any of your books.
For any of my books. Fry Guys, maybe six months at least. But, you know, I didn't write this. Eric wrote this. And then when I get the manuscript, I mean, there was a lot of work on his end to kind of do the work than it takes to me. And this is really my first time doing something that's 80 pages. And I know that in the graphic novel world, that is nothing. But to me, coming from a picture book, board book world, 80 pages is a lot. And so that was something that for me to get used to. And also this is it's a little different technique. Obviously, if you see the art, you know, art styles are slightly, it's still me. Both of this is me, but they're definitely different and it's a different technique. So I wasn't quite sure how long things would take me, but yeah, it's at least, you know, 6 months on my end probably. And then it's like a 1 year cycle before this book can actually get printed and then finally be on the shelf. So I was working on this last summer, pretty soon, basically all summer was this book. So, and the board books take a little shorter, maybe. Still a long time, I feel like.
So, I guess my next question is that in today's world, there's a lot of pressure on picture book authors to be illustrators. Most agents who are open to picture book submissions are open only to author illustrators.
Okay.
What are your thoughts about this?
I did not know that, because I guess I'm coming from a different point of view. I was an illustrator first, then an author illustrator. I think that's an easier transition, being an illustrator and then author illustrator versus author and then author illustrator, because I know that the art just that could be really hard to have your art be really polished. So I think that's, I did not know that was the case. I mean, for me as an author illustrator, that's great. But I guess if you're coming from being an author point of view, I don't think that you should be, there wouldn't be like a limit to what you can submit, even though you're just an author per se, right?
But there's another interesting thing that you said in this conversation, because not all illustrators can write wonderful texts like you can. But you said that you were coming at it, that your stories are often character driven.
Yes.
And I think that maybe that is a way for an illustrator to find his voice as an author. And I never thought about that before. Because as authors who are not illustrators, we have to spend a lot of time imagining, you know, empty spaces. You know, like throwing up a tennis ball in the air and waiting for you to hit it. But we have no idea what you're going to do with that, with the text. Still,
we have to leave an image in your book, though? When you're writing, do you have, like the characters you're writing. No, no, like this.
It's a very amorphous image.
Interesting.
I just had my first traditionally published children's book come out, and the illustrations were fantastic, but they weren't anything that I imagined. And to be frank, I tried not to imagine them.
Right.
Because I was afraid that would lead me to limit the freedom of the illustrator in owning the story.
Yes, which as an illustrator, I appreciate that very much, I have to say.
a few words on that, please. Illustrator notes and so on.
Oh, no, so I do 100%.
Be honest now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, as an illustrator who've illustrated other, you know, manuscripts, I really appreciate when it's not heavily art noted, because it definitely stifles my imagination to what I need and want it to be. And just authors appreciating that illustrator's contribution to a picture book, you know, I've always said it's a marriage of text and image. So without one or the other, it doesn't work. It's not, illustrators are not there to just kind of draw, like we're not hired from here to here to just draw the images. We're thinking about a lot of things behind our head to kind of come up with the imagery that suits the story. So I definitely appreciate not a lot of art notes. And of course we want to give the story justice too. Like we want the author to be happy too. We want both of us to be happy with like whatever we all combine and come up with, right? So.
But do you ever feel hard done by, you know, we write the texts, and, you know, sometimes it takes a long time to write a text, especially for a picture book. It's ironic, but it takes a lot of revision. Mm-hmm. But then the illustrator comes and works at it for months and with his or her or their vision, but don't always get credit.
Right. Yeah, don't always get credit. I mean, there's been a campaign to kind of when we mention picture books, where we always say the author's name and the illustrator's name, you know, there's this kind of campaign happening. And I think it's better now. I think more authors, I hope, is more aware of, you know, that it's pretty important to mention the illustrator's name too every time you mention the book, because we put a lot of hard work into it. So I mean, it's also just nicer when kind of like, you know, like you feel like you own the book as well. You know, you feel ownership versus like if you treat it as a way where you're just hired hand, then sometimes as illustrators are like, well, this is just a project, and it gives us more motivation to like market the book and like celebrate the book, you know, so it's good for everybody, I think, in the end.
Well, this has been a learning lesson for me, because here we are, you and I. And we're celebrating a book that you illustrated and did not write.
Mm-hmm.
And I rarely do this on my show. And I think that I should do more of it. So if you know any other splendid illustrators who have picture books coming out, send them my way, because I want to fix this.
Yes. That would be great. I mean, Eric's been wonderful, and it's just, I feel ownership of this book too. Like, you know, I want to tell everybody about these characters. That's
why they call it a picture book.
Book. Yes. 100%.
So is there, the problem that I have, and I think the reason that I haven't done it is because as an author, it's very hard for me. You know, I told you in the next year, I'm going to try and start illustrating, but probably it'll be a disaster, but I'm hoping it'll increase my sensibilities towards the illustration side.
I think that's a great idea.
Because when I look at a book with my illustrator friends, you know, I read the text and I glance at the pictures. they just look at the pictures and they glance at the text. We miss a lot of things, both sides, I think. We're coming towards the end of the show.
Oh.
What advice do you have to give to aspiring authors and illustrators?
Oh, gosh. What advice do I have? I think that I would say that there's a lot for aspiring authors and illustrators, there's a lot of resource out there that you should take advantage of. You don't have to be alone. You don't have to sit at home, write alone and figure it out. You know, join SCBWI, join a critique group, have people to support you and cheer you along the way. I think that's really, really important. I had a lot of cheerleaders kind of help me along the way. It wasn't me just kind of writing and being brilliant. I wish I was, to kind of come up with stories and brilliant illustrations to go with the text. I mean, there was a lot of help. So receive help, get feedback from others and keep going.
And do you ever get rejected?
Oh, yeah. Oh yes. Here, I'm going to show you. Speaking of rejection, so this is one of my books called Creative Obstacles ABC. So this is just something I self-published. It's for comics, but so if you look at R, consent for rejection. And so, yes, I know all about rejection. And I think rejection.
Okay, read us the page, Jamie.
Oh, okay, here. This is just rejection. No, so I draw myself
read
as a
read
chicken.
It to us. Okay.
So knock, well, knock.
You're the chicken girl.
I'm the chicken girl. And it's just me knocking on the different doors. And the bear just says no, slams the door. And it says, all I need is one yes. But when will that come exactly? And then there's a little doormat that says go away in this big hall full of doors.
This is incredible.
Thanks.
Because if I didn't know, you'd accuse me of plagiarism. My book is about a girl who goes from door to door and wants to be accepted.
Oh, really? Oh, synchronicity. I mean, come on, Al.
How spooky is that? Well, you know, we all write from similar tropes, don't we?
Yes.
It's hard to invent an animal or a story that hasn't been done already.
Yes, yes. But, oh, that's so funny. But
it's hilarious.
We've both gone through rejection. So that means you're in the game. I always say that to myself. It means if I get rejected, that's mean I was never sitting in the sideline. I'm actually in the game. And that's already half the battle, being in the game.
You're on the playing field.
Yes, absolutely.
So I guess the message is don't sideline yourself.
No, absolutely participate in the game. It's going to happen, but...
Stay on the field.
Stay on the field, yes.
Hey, it even happened to me. I'm almost 72 years old. Can you imagine?
You do not look 72, though.
But I am. At least I think I am. I'm going to make a calculation after the show.
Okay.
And this is my first traditionally published book, and it's in Hebrew.
Congratulations.
And so if you persevere, sometimes it does happen.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm here to talk about you. So we are here celebrating this wonderful lady, Jamie Ho, who has now come out with her 100th book. I'm guessing, you'll have to correct me.
I'll have to go count.
And you should. You're American now. Come on. Enough of the Buddhism culture. You got to promote yourself, honey. Okay.
Yes.
Show everybody your wonderful book written by Eric Giron, illustrated by Jamie Ho. A chance to show everybody for the last time, the Fry Guys.
Yes.
Out in 12 days. A word it about the editor and the publisher, please.
Yes. Like a wonderful Aaron at Andrews McNeil. So
wonderful. And good luck with that. And
thank you.
I'd like to have you back in about a year. But in the meantime, we're going to say goodbye to everybody. If you could leave and come back to the link so that we can share a few private words.
Okay.
And so everybody can be jealous of me. I love when people are jealous of me. Jamie Ho, I don't know what brought you to Philadelphia, but it turned out to be a very good thing. And congratulations on your wonderful career. And it was great hosting you. And before I forget, I am Mel Rosenberg, and you have been with the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And we are here once or twice a week with wonderful writers, authors, illustrators, agents, publishers. And it's been terrific, Jamie. So go away and come back, and all you suckers, have a nice weekend.
Okay. Bye.
I'll see you in a minute.
Okay.